everyone. Welcome to Nancy's Metaphysical World and More. My name is Nancy, and I host the show. And today, I have a great guest on. I don't believe I've had a guest like this in a long time, so it'll be pretty interesting for all of you animal lovers. Her name is Sandy. And Sandy, come on in. How are you?
I'm good, thanks, this evening, Nancy.
Now, Sandy, let's talk a little bit about who Sandy happens to be so that the people who are listening will get to know you a little bit. So let's talk about what prompted you to actually, you know, start your journey with what you do. And we're going to talk about what you do in your book, but tell us a little bit of history about you.
It all started with horses. My dad started me riding when I was four, so horses have been a part of my life all my life. And I worked professionally in New York through the, 80s and 90s. And then I quit because I just couldn't do it anymore. And then the communication work grew out of all the years of work with the horses. It wasn't a job I was looking for. And they just, you know, kept pushing me because they kept saying, you can hear us, you know, and you can see our pictures. And we want you to help with the humans, you know, the problems that sometimes happen. And so I finally agreed. So that was in 1997. And I started doing the communication work, and horses are my specialty, but I work with dogs and cats, and just recently worked with a parrot, which was really interesting. So.
It's kind of funny, Sandy, because a lot of people go, talk to animals? You can't do that. But you know what really is going on is people do it all the time. I just don't think they realize they're doing it. And so when somebody says, well, you know, I'm an animal communicator, they look at you and go, yeah, well, how do you do that? But people know, like, if their pets aren't feeling well or if something's going on, they get that feeling. You know, whether they understand it or not may be a different story. But really, I think, Sandy, everybody does and can communicate to animals if they just open their hearts and listen. Would you find that to be true?
Oh, I agree very much. As a matter of fact, I find, I tell my clients, all the time, trust yourself. You're hearing more from your animal than you know. And, they'll call me to work with animals because there's a problem. And 9 times out of 10, that human will say, is the animal is showing me, and then I'm relating with the animal showing me back to the human, and the human will go, I felt that. I felt that. And I'll say, that's right. You were receiving that directly. And I find a lot of times it gives that human a reference point.
Mm-hmm.
It's something they can touch and feel. And then I say, well, now in the future, when you feel something like that, you really are feeling your animal, and it, because we all it's telepathy. We all are born with the equipment, and at some point in our human development, for lack of a better way to put it, we stopped using it, but it's there.
Well, Sandy, why do you think we stopped using it? What do you think prompted us to do that?
I think that we started using, like, language. We started using our speaking ability more. And then we started to write, and rely on, so between the written word and our speaking word, I think we very heavily started to rely on that. And then that telepathic ability kind of it faded into the background a little bit more, and I think it's starting to reemerge.
Mm-hmm.
Because
I was just going to agree with you, but go ahead, because you were going to keep going.
I just find that like in 1997, when I basically said, okay, you know, I'll do the communication work. It was not as well known then as it is now. Like now, I find, you know, when I call myself an interspecies translator, because that's what I'm doing. I'm translating pictures into words. And but as I say, you know, I'm an animal communicator. There are more and more people go, oh, I heard about that, you know, on the radio, or I read an article. So I think it's definitely more, well, I'd say well known now than it was when I started in 1997.
Do you think people are, in general, Sandy, starting to allow their own intuition come into play a lot more than, you know, way back when? And if you do, because we just talked about this a couple of minutes ago, but if you do, why do you think that's happening?
I would say yes to that. I think people are. You know, I think that is something that is happening. And I think that, to me, what I see kind of in a universal way is that there's a real change that's happening. I see it in the animals. I see it in ourselves. And I don't know. It's like, I'll put it this way. I feel like our consciousness is being raised across the board. And I feel like we're being asked as humans to come into a place that we are, but that we've kind of forgotten. And now we're being asked, like I see it with the animals, like they're asking us to remember who we are.
See, and I find that real interesting, because I know that animals have a great deal of intuition. That's their survival. And humans have it too, but like you said, we use words instead of, you know, going inward and trusting ourselves. When you're communicating with some of the animals, Sandy, have they said anything to you about, you know, what they feel is still yet to come? I mean, because they're highly, highly intelligent. We just don't think they are, but they are. Mm-hmm. So have they, you know, like when you're communicating with them and, you know, they've told you anything about, you know, any kind of warnings or anything that needs to be changed in order to help balance the earth?
Let's see. Well, they are asking for respect for their beingness.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, to especially like with the horses, that they willingly serve, because that's an agreement that they made, you know, with humans, and that they're asking for a recognition and a respect, you know, in that service, and also they're asking humans to look at what we're doing with them. And you know, like, just, you know, how we manage them, how we house them, the jobs that we give them. It's not so much they're saying, you know, we don't want to do it. They very much are saying, look, we're willing to do it, and we're asking you as humans to step up to a place of, like, responsibility in how we do that. And I've been seeing that, I mean, across the board, but I find that in the last 5 years, and especially in the last year, that is even more, like, say, on the table.
Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not really an animal communicator. I am psychic, highly intuitive, which goes along with their wave. And about probably maybe 15 years ago, when PetSmart got into the Chicagoland area, maybe a little bit longer by now, they actually called my company and wanted me to bring a bunch of psychics, like 15 psychics, into all their stores that were opening up, so that when the people walked in to look at the pets and, you know, maybe brought in their own pets, to give them a little insight about, you know, what was going on. Mm-hmm. And I found it very interesting because, you know, that was, you know, that's a pretty long time ago. And at that time, I know a lot of people would look at you and you say, oh, yeah, I know what your dog is thinking or your cat's saying, or I know what their personality is. They look at you kind of funny. So, you know, it was kind of a thrill to know that a company like, I think it was Petco, you know, was mm-hmm. at least open enough and knowing enough that it can be done. And it was a lot of fun, you know, and it wasn't hard because the animals freely try to talk. You know, they try to let you know what's going on. They let you know if they're lonely. They let you know mm-hmm. if there's something bothering them, you know, and it was a thrill because it was just, you know, kind of neat. So when you talk about talking with animals, to me, your life would have to be very thrilling. I'm sure it's not always thrilling, but just the fact that you're able to communicate as well as you do.
Yeah, it definitely it is interesting, and I you know, like I said, it's not a job that I was looking for. I you know, was a professional horseman, and that was my life. You know, I was teaching riding and, you know, working with young horses. I had an accident, and that accident basically ended that part of my life. And it was almost like the universe said, well, okay, you know, this was a job, but now I've got another job for you. And it took a while. It was a 4-year journey from 1993 to 1997 when I finally, you know, cause I thought, right, you know, you're going to go out and tell people. All right, you know, especially being a professional horseman in New York. Yeah, you're going to go to the Professional Horsemen's Association and announce, hey, guys, I can talk to horses now. So I sat with it, and the horses in particular really pushed. And finally, I just said, okay, in 1997, I said, you know, all right, I'll do it. And I ended up moving from New York to Vermont, and I found, I don't know, it was just in order to make that step, I had to go someplace where no one really knew me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only just in the last couple of years that I've reconnected to a lot of the people that were in my life when I was a professional horseman, and you know, now they know what I do, but I didn't, it was really uncomfortable. It was a very uncomfortable time in my life.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, and it would be because people like to ridicule other people as often mm-hmm. as they can, you know.
Yeah.
And, but the thing is, Sandy, once people started, you know, coming to you and what you were telling them was working and the truth, I'm sure that also opened up a bigger spot in you to even do it much better.
It is evolving. It's not static at all. I find that you know, the longer I do it, and the more animals that I know that I work with, and if I look back, you know, just the changes are there. Some of it is subtle, some of it's not so subtle. And because it's finding that balance.
Mm-hmm.
And most of my work happens on the phone, which for a lot of people is a real mystery. And I don't know, you know, except that I know it's telepathy, and as long as that animal will give me permission to work, you know, it doesn't matter. I don't need to be there. For me, it's their name. Like, a lot of people will say, well, let me send you a picture and let me give you all this information. I'll say, no, please don't send a picture. And the only information I ask for is the species, the name, which for me is, that's the key, their age, their sex, and if it's, if there's a breed. And that way I can go in kind of clean.
Mm-hmm.
And then, because when I open up and I ask for that animal's permission, very often they'll show me something or several somethings sometimes that very often will have nothing to do was why the human called me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I relay, you know, I'll go, then I say, okay, you know, your animal is given permission, and these are the things that, you know, that, like one of the things that I see a lot are headaches.
Mm-hmm.
Especially horses and dogs. And people are just amazed, you know, like they get to have a headache, and I go, oh yeah, you know, like that's not uncommon. And then the other piece that's really important is that I am only able to do what that specific animal can do with me.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you know, if the headache is what's important, that's what they're going to show me. And there could be, in some cases, like something that's already been diagnosed by a veterinarian, and they won't show me that at all. But they'll show me the headache or something else. And then, you know, and then sometimes the human will then say, well, this is what the diagnosis is. And then we'll put that on the table.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're willing to work. So it's not an exact science, but, you know, like, and I think sometimes some people, they think that I'm going to be able to see everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I really am very clear with people. No, I can only go where your animal is going to allow me to go. And I can only work with what they're going to allow me to work with. And because I have to be respectful.
Yes, and that's very true. Sandy, does your ability go beyond that, like, say, an animal that's already crossed over?
It does if they're willing.
Okay.
And, yeah, that's not, you know, a big part of my work, but there are times, especially if it's an animal, like, I'd say sometimes almost 50% of my work is working with animals that are really critically ill.
Mm-hmm.
and dying. And so, I then, you know, can work with that animal and human, and to get clarity, because, you know, the human will call and they'll say, well, we've got an appointment at 2:00 tomorrow. We're going to put her down. And very often, you know, that animal will say, I'm not ready.
Mm-hmm.
Can we negotiate? And so I then, you know, will negotiate with the human, and then sometimes that negotiation is that especially with dogs and cats, it's a lot harder with horses, that to allow that animal to go what they call in their own dying rhythm movement.
Mm-hmm.
And that, is an interesting journey. So when those animals do cross, they're easy, you know, because I've already been working with them. So,
mm-hmm.
They're much easier than, like, occasionally, you know, someone will call and we'll work with an animal that's here, and then they'll say, well, you know, we had a dog that died last week. And then, you know, I just say, well, you know, if they'll come in. And for me, that's the problem with lost animal work, is the way they show up to me, how they feel, you know, in my that telepathic place, they, whether they've got a body or not, they feel the same.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, that the lost animal work is very difficult, because you can make contact sometimes with them, but if they don't know they've crossed, you know, sometimes they don't. Sometimes it takes, you know, like a day for them to realize, oh, I don't have a body anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so that the working with animals and spirit work is it's tender, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There's a sweetness to it. There's a tenderness to it. Yeah.
Yeah, because I know, like, a lot of people knowing that I'm psychic, they'll call and go, you know, I lost my dog. It's like, yeah, okay. You know, and sometimes it comes, and sometimes I just tell my, you know, I can't. You know, I'm not sure why or anything, but sometimes, you know, like my aunt had lost her dog, and she happened to call me, and I said, well, just, you know, I opened my mind real quick, and I didn't even know what her dog looked like, but I said, go down to the neighbor's about half a mile down the road on a gravel road and off to the right, and she's probably got your dog. And she went down there and she found her dog, you know, but it doesn't happen like that all the time for me because that's not what I do. I do the human part versus the animal, but it's just that intuition can do a lot of different things if people would just allow it to do it. And so again, talking, you know, whether it's human or animal, and if there's a person that's in between them, that's got to be, you know, really satisfying somewhere, you know, somehow to know that you're helping somebody with communication.
Yes, and very often, you know, one of the things that I've learned, like with the lost animal work, is this is a couple of years ago, and it was two dogs that had gone off together, and I was able to, the older dog, I was able to make contact with, and he was really clear. He said, whoa, he said, I'm not going back because they're angry.
Mm-hmm.
So I said to the human, I said, he's feeling your anger and upset. He's not, you know, it's a little confusing for him. So I said, let's clear that up. You know, let's have you just, you know, take all of that and let it go, you know, hand it off to the universe and say, I'm happy to have you come back. You know, I'm really content and happy to have you come back. He was back in 12 hours.
Mm-hmm.
That's because, yeah, it was really cool. And the young dog didn't come with him because she had not been happy there. And so she just made it clear, you know, tell him I'm okay. And there's another human that I'm, you know, and she went off and found another human. So, yeah, but so I find myself saying to people, relax, because animals are like, they're like a 2.5-year-old, a 3-year-old human child. Like small children, they will pick up a discord in the house. Like they'll pick up that, you know, mom and dad are upset. But what they don't have the capability of understanding is the what, like what they're upset about. So very often they'll feel the upset, but they won't understand. And so very often they'll go, uh-oh, I did something wrong. And, you know, the big people they're upset with me. And animals tend to do the same thing. So I'm learning to coach the humans to, like if they're feeling guilty about leaving for work, the animal is picking that up, and then sometimes there's a behavior, a stress. So when we can clean those things up and have a clarity and have that human, so I say, look, just tell your dog when you're leaving for work that, you know, you have to go to the empty space because they don't have they can't imagine anything other than where they are. So for them, they're humans going to the empty space, and I say, now let them know it's all right. And let the guilt go that you're leaving and just say, you know, I have to go now. And I'm okay, everything's fine, and I'll handle whatever the upset is, and I'm fine with you. I'm very happy, you know, that you're doing a great job. And it's amazing and I tell people, just do it. I said, don't worry about, I said, they'll get it. You know, like, just know that you have the capability to do it, and whether you can, you know, whatever feels comfortable. If it's better that you speak it, you know, there are pictures in the words.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that when people start getting that clarity, with their animals about when there are upsets, the animals, because animals don't have filters.
Right.
You know, like children, by the time they're between 5 and 7, that's when children start building filters. Well, animals do not have that capability. So when we're in a highly emotional state, whatever that's about, that animal is getting, they're getting slammed with that emotion, but they don't always understand, you know, so they'll be like, oh boy, you know, my humans, boy, I did something really bad. And then it sometimes actually can morph into like a physical condition because mm-hmm. they've taken the energy. So, and how the animals see it is they see these little gray clouds that hang in the air, like in the house,
mm-hmm.
and they will suck those clouds in, you know, thinking that, well, if I get rid of that, then my human's going to feel better. So, so if you've got the human having an awareness of where they are, what they're doing emotionally, taking responsibility, letting their animal know, I will handle this. This is mine. I will handle the little gray cloud in the air, and that's not your job. Then the animals then are going to be less overloaded with all that those heavier vibrations.
That, well, you know, you talked about the two dogs leaving together and not coming back. Well, that's what happened to my daughter. She had two puppies and they got out. They left, ran as fast as they could. And then the little male came back, but the female's never come back in. It's been probably about a month and a half. And they spent a lot of time looking for her, but, you know, she just needed freedom, you know, and that's
yeah.
kind of what she took. You know, so mm-hmm. the little male came back, so we have the male, but of course not mm-hmm. the female. But mm-hmm. I don't think that she really, you know, crossed over, but I do think somebody else has her, and whatever the reason, that's where she's at.
Yeah.
But, you know, that happens, and it's like, you know, people have to let go of that. They have to get over it because holding on to it isn't going to help anything because the animal will still pick up, you know, that, okay, well, where are you? I'm having a hard time without you. You know, I feel really bad. I hope you're okay. I mean, and energy going out to animals like that, they don't have the filters, and they really can't filter like, you know,
right.
we think we do.
Mm-hmm.
Let's give out any kind of a phone number or email address that people can get a hold of you, Sandy, in case they'd like to contact you.
Okay. My phone number is 970-420-6282. I'm better with the phone. I do have email, but people grow old waiting for you. I'm trying to get better, but it's a struggle.
It's a pain because you get so many of them. But give out your phone number again, and we'll do it again before we go off air, but give it out again so people can write it down.
Okay. 970-420-6282.
Okay. Now let's talk a little bit about your book, Sandy. The name of it is called Horses, and then there's a little subtitle. It says, From Our Side of the Fence, which is kind of cute.
Mm-hmm.
And so tell the people a little bit about your book. You don't have to give it all away, but tell them a little bit about your book and really what prompted you to write it.
Well, the horses were the prompting. It started in 2000, you know, and I lived actually in New Mexico at the time. And, you know, they would show up and they'd say, well, you know, you hear us really, really well. And we'd like you to tell our stories. And not so much the stories, but we'd like you to tell humans, like, what it's like for us living in a human-dominated world. So this went on for 4 years. And finally, in 2004, I said, okay, guys, you know, and of course, you know, they weren't coming to me going, well, we want you to write a book. They don't know what a book is.
Right.
You know, all I kept getting was, it was like, we want you to reach, like, humans. And I saw, that a book could be a way to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so in 2004, I said, okay, stop waking me up in the middle of the night.
I know how it goes.
Yeah. Stop hounding me. I will do that. And then, so I made an agreement that I would tell their point of view, it wasn't going to get prettied up. It was going to be, exactly the way it was given to me. And so I just started, I'd be someplace and, a horse would approach me and they would start showing me pictures of, and basically the book, the chapters, each chapter in the book is a topic. So, it's like, stallions and breeding, mares and breeding, there's a chapter on dying. Dying is a huge, there's a huge difference in their point of view and ours. There's a, topic on shoeing and weaning. So as I was out and about, the book was written in 5 different states. And I just, would work with a horse and a certain, that, like, as I worked, it would fall into, one of those topics.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just started, I kind of just started, and it was all written in longhand. And then the way it reads is it's a mixture of, their point of view, and when they're basically quote unquote talking.
Mm-hmm.
So it's written like poetry translated from a foreign language. So it's not written like in everyday English,
mm-hmm.
Which was a little bit of a challenge in, in the editing process. I was very fortunate. My publisher and the editor were really wonderful, both horsewomen, so I made it clear. I said, when the horses are, quote, talking, I said, you may not touch that. That is going to be just the way it comes out. And so it's, when people are reading it, at first it's a little bit of a challenge, when the horses are speaking. But then people have discovered that if they can just sort of relax and just, allow themselves to just read the words and allow the pictures to come.
Mm-hmm.
It's really pretty. It's pretty powerful.
I would think it would be. Again, everything has its own kind of language. When
mm-hmm.
Now you said you mostly do it by phone, so you're mostly doing it remote. When you have done it, right there with the animal, whether it be a horse, dog, or whatever. Is there a difference in the way it comes to you, Sandy, or is it still the same?
It's the same. The thing that I find that's different for me is that I can actually see, what they're like. This one house I went to, they had 5 dogs and I think 4 cats and when I got to the door, one of the dogs met me at the door, and I just stood there, because this dog was looking at me like, you move, and I'm biting. And of course, the woman, she was standing there, and she's like, well, why didn't you touch him? And I said, because he's gonna bite me. And I said, he's really clearly saying, and I said, look, I'm just gonna stand here quietly, and I'm just gonna, let him, kind of call the shots right now. This is his territory I'm coming into. And then, he realized, oh my gosh, that I was actually seeing his pictures, that I was responding directly, to what he was showing me, that I just stood there, hands at my side. And then he kind of let out this deep breath, and he took a step forward, and he bumped the back of one of my hands. He just, with his nose. And then he just looked up, and he went, okay. And then he turned around, and it was like, okay, follow me into the house now. And so, and then when I sat on the couch, it was a little bit of chaos, and the gal started to get upset. And I said, no. I said, well, I'm just going to sit here, and I'm going to let them just kind of sort themselves out, and you know, we'll decide which one of these guys we're going to work with first. And then, you know, but first let's just get quiet. And it was amazing. Like once they kind of did what they needed to do, they all picked a spot and everybody just laid down. Okay. And then we started, you know, working. So when I'm on site, I can see that. But if I'm on the phone, you know, I'll just get the impressions that we've got a little bit of chaos going on, but and it was interesting, like some of the animals in that particular instance, like when we were done with them, they would actually get up and leave the room. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, I'm done.
So, that would be kind of cool.
Yeah. So that's kind of fun for me to be able to, but as far as how I function, it's the same, you know, that part. Mm-hmm. And like I've had a couple of horses where I would sit, you know, on a bucket outside a pen and where like this one horse in particular, he wasn't really sure that, he was going to do this, you know, so he had his butt to me. And I just said to the woman, I said, well, you know, we may not do anything today. He's not real happy with, you know, with this. And I'm going to just sit here and be quiet and be respectful. And then when he realized I was not going to push him, he then turned around and faced me and he went, okay. So those are the things that I can't see on the phone.
Mm-hmm. It's really funny. I have two dogs. They're brothers, litter mates, never been separated. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one's mine and one's my daughter's. My daughter's dog is a real flake. Okay. Mine just wants to be petted and will just do whatever you want to do. Hers still has that freedom. They're part wolf and part husky and mm-hmm. probably something else. You know, and they get along very, very well for being litter mates and not, you know, being in each other's faces. It was really funny because when I saw the one that I got, I didn't get him right away, but I knew he was going to be really, really good. And so I said to the lady who owned the puppies, I said, mm-hmm. if, you know, whoever's going to take him doesn't want him, then, you know, I will take him. Well, we took my daughters first, and then these other people had, his name is Bear, but the man of the house didn't want him because he kept howling all night long and he couldn't sleep, so they brought him back. Well, she called me right away, and she said, Nancy, they brought the puppy back. I said, well, you know, I'll come and get it. It'll probably do him some good to see his brother again. Mm-hmm. And it was, like, really funny because, it, you know, that's what he wanted. He wanted to be with his brother. He didn't want to be separated by himself.
Mm-hmm.
But as a puppy, I mean, I look, like, right into his eyes, and he's got these very wise eyes,
mm-hmm.
where my daughter's dog, her puppy at the time, wouldn't even look at your face. You know, if you
yeah.
tried to look in his eyes, it'd look all over the place and look away. You know, so
mm-hmm.
the personalities are totally different, you know, and it's funny to watch them because Bear, which is mine, and King is hers, they have their
mm-hmm.
little roles to play, and Bear's actually
mm-hmm.
become the most dominant one. And it's
mm-hmm.
not because he's mean, it's just he's bigger, you know. But they're real funny to watch because, you know, they'll look at each other, and you know that they're communicating. They haven't, you know, they haven't barked or growled or anything, but they just know what each other is saying.
Yeah. Yeah, they've
you know.
Never, the animals have, the animals never forgot their telepathy. I mean, they never stopped, you know, they've always used it. We're the ones that, you know, took that turn in the road someplace, you know.
Yeah, we call it progress.
Yeah. Yeah.
Uh-huh. I don't. I call it deprogress, but I'm a little prejudiced. Sandy, if somebody wanted to get your book, Horses from Our Side of the Fence, where would they go to get it?
It's on Amazon.
Okay.
So, yep, they can go onto Amazon and get it there.
Okay, now, if they want, do they look it up by your name or just by the title, or both?
Either one. If either one will bring it up.
Okay, and the last name is Lagno. Sandy.
Correct.
Lagno. It's called,
yep,
Horses, and then underneath it says, from our side of the fence. There is a very strong connection between autistic children and horses. Mm-hmm. And maybe, since you were a horse trainer and stuff and a horse communicator, can you explain to the listeners why there is such a great connection for autistic children and horses?
Well, let's see. They're open. You know, that channel is really open in these children. And I just, in the last year, actually, I'm autistic, only, mm-hmm, you know, kind of a low, and so that, it, you know, when I was a child, like, you know, when I was growing up, you were just, well, you're one of the stupid kids, you know, they didn't know about, like, learning disabilities and things, so. But what I see in children with autism is that, you know, they're just so much more open, and so, like, it's like their channel is just functioning, and so it's just like they have this really easy and the animals, especially the horses, you know, they recognize that. I mean, I can be, you know, like, when I'm out and about, I mind my own business, you know. I just, if somebody wants to approach me, that's fine, but otherwise, you know, I don't have the right to interfere, you know, in someone's, mm-hmm, life. And so it's amazing, you know, and animals just, they see that in me. They recognize, like, you see my pictures, and that's what these children do also, is that they have that ability, you know, to see those pictures, and of course the animals just respond to that.
How important, Sandy, do you think it is for children to have a pet, like a dog or a cat or a horse or something that's like theirs as a pet?
I think it is important, and of course, you know, everybody's situations, you know, are different. I know in my own life, you know, I was born in New York City, and we moved because of, you know, my dad bought me a horse when I was five, and so that forced us to move from New York City to the country. And so I know in my own life, the horses, the dogs, the cats, were a huge, huge part of my growing up, and they were probably my sanity as a child. Mm-hmm. They became my safe place.
Okay.
Because I didn't, you know, really fit in really well. Because, you know, just, and then you learn, I think children, like, because you want to fit in, you suppress certain things because you want to be like everybody else. So I would say, I think that, you know, for children to have contact with, you know, with animals, I think it's a wonderful thing. And I think it's also a way of their learning responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
That they're, you know, that here's a being that, you know, needs care. And I think that animals help take us outside ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that, you know, if the circumstances allow it, I think animals are really wonderful, a wonderful influence in a child's life.
You know, one of the things, Sandy, that I'm going to do with my school is bring in horses and dogs, mm-hmm, so that children actually have the opportunity to touch them, you know, mm-hmm, work with them a little bit. and, you know, help balance themselves out as far as their emotions, because I think the animals are really, really good for helping children with emotions, you know, because they're gentle. And they understand if a child is having a hard time, they're actually pretty gentle. I mean, unless, you know, the child will do something that might scare them or whatever, but normally animals are very gentle with children.
Yes, yeah. They really, like, I worked in the early 80s. I worked in a therapeutic riding program, and it that year of working in that program, it really changed. Like when I went back to just, you know, like teaching able-bodied people, it really changed how I taught, because I realized that, you know, it's to take each human and not to focus on, you know, what they can't do, but focus on what they do, and then build on that. I saw, like, you know, things happening with the children and adults that were in that therapeutic riding program. Things that were just amazing, you know, and you're right about the emotional, we had a child that got really, really upset and took their helmet off and threw it. And the horse got scared and jumped away as this helmet came, you know, bouncing at it. And in that moment, you know, this child, you know, saw that and went, oh, I hurt Billy. Oh, and they made a connection, you know, to that outburst. And it was just, it was a huge step for this child.
But I would imagine, you know, to see that reaction, because most children, unless they're by an animal and something like that happens, I don't think they understand how big of a deal that is. Now, Sandy, give out the name of your book again and your phone number and where they can get your book.
It's called Horses from Our Side of the Fence. It's available on Amazon. And my number is 970-420-6282.
Okay. Now, have you ever come up against a horse that's a bully?
There and you know, they have herd dynamics, and you've got your lead horses, you know, your upper horses, you've got the middle herd horses, and then you've got your low end horses, and so some of that behavior is just simply herd, what I call herd dynamics, you know, like an upper herd horse is simply going to push a lower horse, like, away from food, or, you know, push them to a, you know, and say, look, I want you over here. So that, you know, that aspect can sometimes, you know, look like it, you know, bullying, but they're just doing, you know, what horses do. So, and I think that even with humans, like, I was riding the other day and the horse I was on just, you know, started to, act up and basically, you know, he was asking me, well, are you leading me? You know, because horses need leadership.
Mm-hmm.
That's how a herd functions. And so in that moment, you know, he was really looking to see whether I was really going to step into that leadership mode and take care of it, or whether I was not going to, and then that would, you know, put him in that driver's seat. So it's an interesting dynamic, because I don't think that, like, I don't think that they're naturally, they naturally want to be bullies, but herd dynamic says someone has to lead in any given moment. And if the human doesn't step up to that and take that leadership, then sometimes you've got a middle horse or a lower end horse that's forced into, you know, that situation, and that can be really uncomfortable for them. So I'm not sure I'm exactly answering, you know, the question, but they will, you know, they will push because they're gonna, they want to see, well, you know, who, you know, well, basically it's like they want to see where things stand so that they know what they have to do.
Yeah, you know, and I ask that question for that reason, because I do know that horses want to be, you know, led. They want to have somebody do the lead. And if they have to do the lead, they will. And if they think that a person is afraid of them, they will tend to push them as much as they can. And either the person is going to be so afraid that they give up, and then the horse goes, well, okay, fine. Or the person decides that I'm the boss here, which is what the horse needs. You know, so I think it's an even balance as long as the person, you know, understands that they do have to take the lead, or the horse is going to do whatever it wants to do, you know.
Yes, and I find that in, you know, that is something that comes up a lot in the horse work. You know, someone will be really having a problem with a horse, and, you know, and I'll just say, you know, your horse is looking for you to really step up and be the leader. And so sometimes, you know, I mean, there are no accidents, you know, like who comes into our lives? And so it's often a wonderful opportunity, you know, for a human to actually set boundaries and to step up and say, no, I'm sorry, but you don't get to do that to me. And
right.
It doesn't go ahead.
No, and it doesn't mean go ahead and finish and then I'll just add to it.
Yeah, and it doesn't mean that you have to get rough. You know, it doesn't mean that you do it in an abusive way. But it does mean that you stand up and you say, uh-uh, and they get it. I mean, if you're clear, it's that clarity piece. If you're conscious of it and aware of it and make that clear, you know, no, this is what I'm doing and this is what we're doing. You know, they'll go, oh, okay, no problem.
Yeah, they usually back down. I'm going to tell a quick story. I had a horse. She was half Arabian, half Morgan. Did not know how to walk. Was prance or run. And she tried to throw me a couple times, you know, and a bit wouldn't work in her mouth, so I used to hack on her. And after a while, she figured out that I'm not giving up. You know? And so then she finally started to behave. But it was a chore at first because, you know, she was used to wanting to run and people allowing her to because they didn't know how to control her. And she could, like, turn on a dime. So that's how she tried to throw me. She couldn't have her way. So she would be running almost at dead speed and then take a 90-degree cut. And I thought, you little thing, you know, but we finally got it together. So it was kind of fun. Now, Sandy, just before we're done, because our time is almost up, could you please give out your phone number again and the name of your book and where they can find it?
Okay. The book is Horses from Our Side of the Fence. Available through Amazon, and my number is 970-420-6282.
Great. So, folks, if you're having a hard time with your pet, give Sandy a call. Let her help you out with it, and maybe everybody can be a lot happier and sleep a lot better at night. Right, Sandy?
Yep. Sometimes it's, you know, and I just said that I can't make an animal do anything. It's just, you know, where I do my best to see, you know, what they can show me about what it is that's bothering them. And then, you know, and then once the human has an understanding, and then, you know, once you've got that clarity, very often then things just, you know, they just settle down, you know, because everybody knows exactly where each one is at. And it's like, oh, okay.
Great, Sandy. Thank you for being on the show. Our time is up, but it was very interesting because I think it helped a lot of people understand that pets just need to, you know, understand humans as much as humans need to understand their pets. So, you know, thank you for taking the time. It was very interesting, and good luck with your book.
Thank you, Nancy. Thank you very much for having me on your show.
You take care. Have a great week. May God bless all of you. Have a great time. Take care, and we'll talk next time. Bye now.